And welcome back to Regionally Speaking with your host, Dee Dotson. The 2024 Indiana General Assembly concluded on Friday, March 8th, with policymakers addressing key areas, including childcare, education, as well as Medicaid, just to name a few. The short non-budget session wrapped with lawmakers successfully navigating around controversial issues. Starting on July 1st, most new laws will go into effect. To discuss some of the bills he authored, including a new law that will provide financial oversight of Lake County's Tourism Bureau. Joining us now is Republican State Senator Dan Durnell, who represents Senate District 1 Highland, to discuss some of the bills he authored, including a new law that provides financial oversight of Lake County's Tourism Bureau. State Senator Durnell, thank you so much for joining us today on Lakeshore Public Media.
Well, thank you for having me. This is an absolute pleasure. And Stephen, it's just always a pleasure talking to you, seeing you. I know we just saw each other a few weeks ago at the Edgewater 50th anniversary, so it was great talking to you.
It was actually wonderful seeing you. You were there to accept an award on behalf of Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, and so I think that was so awesome that you were there to accept that well-deserved honor.
Yep, it was an honor. Lieutenant Governor Crouch is an extremely wonderful person, and I would do anything for her. So, it was great.
Absolutely. And she is really and truly a champ for mental health awareness in this state. And so, again, that was a well-deserved honor for her. But I want to talk to you today about the work that you are doing at the State House. So I want to start with this, Senator Durnell. So 2024 was a non-budget year, making this session a short one. A lot of bills were authored and state policymakers were able to accomplish a lot at the State House. I want to start with a bill that you authored that impacts Hoosiers right here in the region, particularly in Lake County. So Senate Bill 37, Oversight of Convention and Visitor Bureau, now Public Law 102, is an amendment to Senate Enrolled Act 434, a bill that was authored by former state senator and now City of Gary Mayor Eddie Melton. Walk us through the overview of this new bill, this amended bill, and why you authored this bill.
Well, and there was a little bit of a change because they only... Unfortunately, we were only given five bills, so I had like seven. And I gave this to Senator Niemeyer to push it through. The main crux of this bill is to just add oversight to the convention board. Don't think anybody's doing anything wrong over on in the convention board. But it is just to give oversight, and the oversight body would be the Lake County Council, which is a fiscal body for the county. We do a lot of that. When I say we, and unfortunately, I say that because I was on the county council for about 12 years. So if I say we, it's because of my term or terms there. But we do a lot of oversight for items such as, a group such as the Park District for Lake County, some of our territories, and so on. Solid waste is another. So this would fall right in that. And the main reason is just to have oversight. And I'm going to be looking at other organizations that do not have an elected body and see if we could do the same. Again, I'm not looking for anything wrong. I just want oversight and that oversight to be from a perspective of an elected person. I think the buck stops with them. The buck stops with me. And I think it was a decent bill. Along with that, in Bill 37, it does give some more time and thought for convention center towns or people that are cities and towns that might be interested in putting the convention center together, because ultimately they will have to give their plans to the commissioners and they will ultimately choose that site. But it will give them more time for them to put something together. The timeline last year was quite short, it seems like, and it just added more time that they can, put a proposal together and submit it to the county commissioner.
Okay, that is excellent. I think it's awesome legislation that you authored, especially because we are just so excited about that previous bill that I spoke about that was authored by Eddie Melton and what that will mean for... I always like to talk about tourism as an economic driver, particularly in the region. Right. And so we're all just so excited for what tourism dollars will bring to the region.
Yeah, and that's a great point. So, this bill from last year, I'm working with now Mayor Melton. Last year, it was Gary-centric. This is before he was mayor. Now he's mayor. But Gary centric, and we wanted to make it Lake County centric. You know, where, you know, the city of Gary and the convention center, if it does go through, proposal is given. It does not necessarily have to be in Gary. It could be in Hammond. It could be in Maryville. It could be in St. John. That would be, you know, they're going to have to put that together, the towns, and for the proposal, whatever the best proposal is. I know this Lake County Commission will do a good job fitting that out.
Senator Drinnell, another bill I would like to discuss with you is Senate Bill 19, License Suspension. And it's a bill that you are just quite proud of. What does this new law actually mean for drivers in the Hoosier State? And why did you author this piece of legislation? Was it in response to feedback that you've received from constituents here in the region?
So this bill had a little bit of legs, and unfortunately, it was kind of diluted a bit. And I'm hoping to bring it back a little and make it a little stronger. The bill specifically will give you an opportunity. The problem comes down to your license can be suspended in an accident, a fender bender, or something more major. And a lot of times your license is suspended. You don't even know your license is suspended unless you get pulled over by the police or you try to renew your driver's license.
That's very true.
And it happened to me, actually. But the reason I did this was attorney Frank Hinkley. He was in a pretty bad accident where he broke his collarbone and he had to go through, you know, rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. And he was coming home a year and a half later, coming home from a meeting, and he was doing, and he'll tell you, 39 out of 25. Okay. So he gets pulled over and the officer says, you know, you're speeding. Let me have your driver's license, blah, blah, blah. Did you know your driver's license is suspended? It was, no, I did not. And ultimately, his car was impounded. It cost him $500 to get it out of and being impounded. And he can afford it. There's a lot of people that can't. So my hope is to, you know, bring it back this year. Oh, right now, let me back up a little bit. Right now, the bill gives more time that if your license is suspended, you have more time to really fight it, and the BMV has more gives you know, you as a driver more time to resolve that issue without your license. Not exactly what I wanted, but it's, you know, the process is being made. So I want to go next year and try to take the, you know, the suspension piece out. I don't think that, you know, your license is suspended. You might even receive a note in a mail. You might not pay attention to it. It's not a card. And I think it's cumbersome for people like me that my license was suspended. And by the way, when my license was suspended, the way I was, I would renew my insurance, actually going to a different carrier, and they said my license was suspended, so I had to get that issue resolved. And it cost me some money. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. I did not push that bill because of me. It was because of the client. And as we were going through, you know, this, even one, a person from the media came up, it happened to me. Mm-hmm. I had a state mm-hmm. representative. That happened to me. I was in Vermont. It happened to me.
Right.
And then several other people came. So it was a good bill, and it's a great start. We just now have to close the deal.
Full transparency, it happened to me. And so, you know, we've talked about the fact that I live in Illinois, and I was pulled over for something. Probably, I think I did an illegal U-turn. I was pulled over in Lake County. This was during the pandemic. I think only the two people on the road were you and me, because you had to work, and obviously I had to work. And I thought that I had taken care of everything, because at that time you had to do everything virtually and online. And when I went to renew my license in 2023 in Illinois, they said, hey, your license had been suspended in Indiana, and then it was lifted, but I still had to pay a boatload of fees. But I had no clue that I had been driving around for 3 years and had at one point had a suspended license. And so I echo the sentiments that you shared, that you too were unaware that your license was suspended. And I love the fact that it gives more room for those who are unable or not in the position to take care of whatever, the fees, the fines, etc., in that short window, that it now gives them a little bit longer to get their affairs in order. And so this bill is really, really great for all Hoosiers.
And, you know, I mean, I'm a person that's a law guy. If this is the law, that's fine. When I found out that my license was suspended, and you know how I feel, I know you feel the same way. It's almost unnerving. Like, oh, my gosh, Mm-hmm. If I would have known,
right,
I would have fixed the issue right away, but I did not know. You know, and again, so many people came up to me and said, this is a good bill. We want to get this. You know, I personally want to take the suspension piece out or curtail it for sure. Right now, we're not there, but we did get something, and it was signed by the governor. So it is law now.
State Senator Durnell, let's look at another piece of legislation you authored, Senate Bill 33, Distribution of Public Safety Income Tax Revenue. Can you unpack this bill and share how it will impact public safety budgets?
All we're trying to do is trying to make sure that any public money for distribution for public safety is done in a good way. Talking with some of the authors and going through it, we're trying to make sure that public safety, and for me, public safety is one of the biggest items that I want to make sure that we have. I make sure that our police are cared for. I want to make sure our fire safety and, of course, first responders related to health issues. Those are things that are cared for, our people are taken care of. We have a long way to go, but we're moving in that direction. So, I will always land on the side of public safety.
I want to shift gears and look at some bills that you authored, but they only received a first reading. They did not receive a second or a third reading, and certainly they were not signed by the governor to become law effective July 1st. So you authored a bill that we spoke about ahead of the 2024 legislative session. We spoke about this back in December of 2023, and it's Senate Bill 13. This bill only received a first reading, but talk more about Senate Bill 13, a bill that will provide financial support to minors that may lose a parent due to a DWI offense. And because it stalled in committee, are you planning to revise it, to rework it, and to bring it back in future sessions?
So I do a matrix, and I have approximately 8 bills right now that I'm looking at. This is one of my priority bills for me. So the bill will be, and the crux of it, and they have this in Tennessee. Well, actually, I received the idea from Sergeant Fifield of Indiana State Police. He and I were at an event, and he brought up this idea. And the nuts and bolts of this, you have a person driving drunk, and they hit a young mother, and she is killed, and she has children, or a father, main breadwinner, or a breadwinner in your family. You, the person that was driving drunk that caused the accident, that caused the death, will have to now pay child support until they're 18. That doesn't stop you from, and I'm talking about the family, the estate of the person that was killed. It doesn't stop them from suing, but it still makes sure that the person that caused the accident is held responsible until those children are out of the care of the parents, or what would, normally be that time. It is actually a bill that I've talked to the Senate chairman, and we are working closely to get something out there. One of my mentors, Senator Cook, who is an attorney, loved the bill. I'm going to be working with him. In fact, I'm going to see him tomorrow on another issue. And he and I'm going to talk to him and see if we could partner together and get this bill out. It's an extremely important bill to me. People I know make mistakes, but, driving drunk is against the law, and you should know not to do that. And if you kill somebody, I don't think it's fair for that child to be not able to financially support, or the family is not able to support him or her because one of the breadwinners of the family was killed. It's just not fair. So I am going to bring that back. It's a priority bill for me. It's not for the Senate, but it is a priority bill for me. And I hope we will get that hearing, and it gets out of Senate committee, it goes to the House, and I already have one of my friends that is willing to take it if it comes out in a good way. So I'm excited to tell you that, and I'm so happy you brought that up, because that is a big, big bill for me.
Now, Senator Durnell, before I let you go, so we all know that 2024 is a big election year. Voters will be voting for and electing a president nationally, but also here at closer to home, we will be electing a new governor. So I want to ask you your thoughts on how national politics will impact the 2025 Indiana legislative session.
Well, the election will be over, and which will be good. I will say that I know who my favorite people are that are running, but everybody that puts their name out there, I give them credit. It's not easy. Your family's being, you are attacked, your family's being attacked, and so on.
Right.
Look, my feeling about where we are right now as a country, we are so divided, and we're more concerned about what people feel, and there's a lot of emotion in the way they feel. I just want to get back to, you know, patriotic country. We do have our flaws. We do have our warts. But we have the best country in the world. And I think we have the best state in the union, Indiana. We are in good shape financially. We are a conservative state for sure. But I, you know, me coming from Lake County, I try to talk to all elected folks, because that's how I worked when I was in the county, on the county council. My hope is we get back to knowing what's important, family values, and you can define family values however you want. I get that, but I want us to get back to the routines of this is the greatest country in the world. We want to make sure that we're cared for, because if America falls, the world will follow, and I'm just very concerned about that. So, you know, I know that's more of a political statement, but it's a concern for me. I have kids that are having kids now, so I have grandkids, and I worry about them. And I make no bones about it. They are the most important things, and especially the grandkids, because they're absolutely the future of our country. As my kids are going through that now, it's something that I'm concerned about, and that's one of the reasons why I'm in public service, you know, to try to make that difference and make it a better place. And I will report to you, I believe from my heart that we are in good shape in Indiana. And I think the country follows a little bit of what Indiana and Hoosier ideals, we would be better.
Absolutely. Not only Hoosier ideals, but I've shared this with you both in interviews and offline when we've had the occasion to see each other in public, that I have not seen the kind of working across the aisle, bipartisan support, the willingness to work with colleagues that are not of your same party. I have not seen that in any other place to the degree in which I have seen it here in the Hoosier State. And so I echo your sentiments that the country as a whole needs to take a page from the book of the state of Indiana. Now, Senator Durnell, what will you be working on over the summer? Are you part of any summer sessions?
Well, I'm involved with a couple of items. Right now, I'm working on, you know, I call it the Hammond School Bill, you know, where, you know, right now a school district has an empty building. They have to sell it to a dollar if a charter school wants to, wants to buy it or use it for a dollar. And to me, I don't think that's right. I think that the school district should be able to sell it. I'm working with actually the city of Hammond. I've worked with them, and I know Lake Station is interested because they're in a world of hurt. And if we could give them some relief, that would be good. I mean, they have to be held accountable to their residents and constituents. I get that, but we need a strong public school system. I'm a school choice guy. I make no bones about it. I'm a product of Catholic schools. But, you know, I believe in my heart that we need to vote. You know, I'm also going to be working to look at digital driver's licenses, you know, having both, you know, your hard license, and maybe a digital driver's license. Don't know if that's going to go through, but I'm looking at some of that. And then I'm also looking, and I'm a little near and dear to my heart. My daughter is a child therapist, and, I did sponsor a bill 102. Where it granted immunity to child therapists, counselors, and, you know, other professionals whose license actually falls under the Behavioral Act and Human Services license. The problem is, you know, if a child's in danger, code of conduct says you're not supposed to say anything. Well, I want to give a bit of immunity to these therapists if the child's in danger, because our most precious asset in this world are children. And if there's a problem with something going on at home and the therapist feels something might be happening, they could lose their license if they break that code of conduct. So I'm going to see if that can be done. I don't know if it can be, but it's something that I'm going to try to bring back. I'm going to talk to the Education Committee Chairman, who's actually, I served on that committee, told me at the end of the day he wasn't going to do it, but I'm going to and still bring that back. So those are just a few examples.
We'll leave it there. And obviously, we will circle back and chat with you after the election, but ahead of the 2025 legislative session, just to see where you are, to see if how far you think that after you've done all of your homework and your work over the summer and meeting with your colleagues, yeah, to see what some of those final priority issues will be that you will be presenting. I thank you so much for joining me. You serve the Hoosier State and us here in the region with integrity and grace, and it's not something that you see quite often. And so I thank you again for joining us here on Lakeshore Public Media.
Dee, thank you so much. And to your listeners, thank you for listening, and look forward to talking to you soon.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media. Yes. He may have taught you how to throw a baseball or even how to drive a car, but have you been following your father's outdated financial advice? Unfortunately, many pre-retirees are currently facing a retirement shortfall, as 1 in 4 Americans are nearing retirement with nothing saved. There's a good possibility you may want to reconsider taking your father's financial advice for your own use. After celebrating Father's Day, Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer joins us now to break down a few financial tips you should as well as should not embrace from your father's generation. Greg, as always, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
Greg, many pre-retirees are facing a retirement shortfall, and 27% of Americans age 59 and older have nothing saved up towards retirement, up from 25% a year ago. Why is this retirement shortfall more crucial now than in previous generations?
Well, I think the, you know, retirement savers should always be concerned about, you know, shortfalls, especially with the retirement. And there's a couple of reasons why the shortfall, I feel, is more crucial compared to what it was in previous generations. You know, first, many people from previous generations worked for companies that offered pensions. You know, except for a couple of industries in today's environment, very few employers offer pensions in 2024. And that means, you know, retirement savers nowadays need to be more proactive in regard for saving for the retirement. And I think you couple that with life expectancy. You know, it's longer than in previous generations. You know, after a 2-year decrease, it's back on the increasing again. And because of longer life expectancy, it's wise, you know, to create retirement plans that will help you get into retirement, but also live comfortably in retirement, even if you should live another 25, 30, 35 years after you retire.
That makes perfect sense. Now, let's talk about financial tips we should or should not embrace from previous generations. Let's start with building an emergency fund. Now, you state that we should embrace saving for emergencies, but not the amount that previous generations have saved. What do you suggest?
Well, it's kind of shocking, but even people who earn, you know, a substantial living often don't have emergency savings and are still living paycheck to paycheck. In previous generations, it was always suggested 3 months. Save 3 months worth of your living expenses in the event of an emergency. And while, you know, it's still highly suggested to save money for emergency expenses, rather than 3 months worth of living expenses, the pandemic taught us that, you know, life can be unpredictable. And it's now recommended to aim, you know, even as high as 12 months worth of living expenses. So if you don't have an emergency savings, start with a month, build each month, and then from there you can hopefully reach your goal, but at least work towards having the 3 month cushion so that if the unexpected happens, it's not going to be a challenge to overcome.
Greg, let's switch gears to taxes. Now, when it comes to saving for retirement, what financial tips are outdated?
Well, I think the biggest part is, you know, we're all told and taught that, you know, think about your expenses will decrease in retirement. But I got to tell you, Dee, that's generally not the case. And that includes your tax liability. You know, we were always taught to be, you know, save today at a deferred rate when taxes will be lower when you retire. And that's generally not the case. So to be a savvy retirement saver, it's not only what you earn during your career, but what you get to keep. And previous generations used traditional IRAs or 401ks to save for retirement and defer until a future date when they would start drawing. And if they didn't need it, they would have to start with their required minimum distributions or RMDs. And that strategy worked in favor for many, many baby boomers because of the current tax code, you know, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And it's made it so Americans have some of the lowest taxes in our lifetime. But that stuff will be changing soon.
Great. So you just mentioned the Tax Act and the Jobs Act. So some of the provisions in the Tax Act and Jobs Act will be expiring soon. Do you think that Congress will extend those provisions within the TCJA?
Well, I think it's, you know, apparent for everybody. No one knows exactly what Congress will do. But the things that we like to talk about and discuss compared to previous generations, the U.S. has an extremely high national debt, you know, $35 trillion. And Congress is looking for ways to pay down the debt. You know, unfortunately, one of the ways to lower debt is by raising taxes. And, you know, many people think there's a good chance that Congress will go this route. Therefore, with the sunsetting provisions, taxpayers will pay more taxes in the future unless there is an act of Congress. And that includes the taxes on not only withdrawals, but your required minimum distributions.
So what can our listeners do?
Well, this is where you want to try to be as strategic with your finances as you can. You know, investing in the traditional IRA or 401k work for baby boomers because of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, but that investment might not be as tax beneficial for future generations that are still working. You know, so while most people don't want to pay more in taxes, the good news is that there are options that retirement savers can implement now to lock in some of these historically low tax rates. While everyone's situation's different, you know, retirement savers should consider investing in Roth IRAs, or a lot of Roth 401ks are now available that weren't available before in programs. And it might be worth the time to discuss options like Roth conversions with a financial professional because of these historically low tax rates.
Now, Greg, what do you say about timing and not timing the market?
You know, at one point in time, investors could try and possibly succeed at timing the market. But, you know, in 2024, it's wise to invest in a diversified portfolio, you know, with a proper mix of asset classes, not just a variety of stocks. You know, generationally, diversification seems to prove its worth over time.
So, Greg, I want to end our conversation with this. Let's end with estate planning, right? So what should we take from previous generations?
Well, I think the simple part of it is it's outdated, right? The old understanding of what estate planning is and the needs for trusts and the more elaborate type of planning, a lot of that has gone by the wayside with the new tax laws. So not everyone requires, in the modern world, complex planning. But almost everyone, regardless of income, should have a plan, should have a proper estate plan and things like their medical directives and power of attorneys and living wills, that type of stuff put in place, and just understand how to have everything set up so that the estate gets passed through to the beneficiaries and doesn't land into the estate.
Greg, in the minute or so that we have left, do you have any final words for a listening audience?
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest thing, the financial landscape today is very, very different than from what it was 50 years ago. You know, since the pandemic, there's been a constant change. You know, with inflation, interest rates have increased dramatically. Market volatility is a lot more prominent. So instead of acting as previous generations where they applied to the old set it and forget it principle, it suggested that you develop a financial plan, you know, rebalance investments, pivot strategies depending on the landscape in which changing in the current financial marketplace, and look for ways to maximize your financial returns, not only from performance, but from a tax efficiency. So it's a lot different than what it was for past generations.
As always, Greg, I really enjoy when you join us here on Regionally Speaking because you always give all of our listening audience great, sound financial advice to plan for a retirement. So I thank you for joining us today on Regionally Speaking, and we look forward to having you back with us next month.
Well, I appreciate that, Dee. Thank you so much for having me on. I enjoy it.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media.
Yes.
Joshua Page is a husband, father, entrepreneur, master electrician, and proud tech school graduate. After graduating in 2002, Page immediately started working as an electrical apprentice. And after a few years, he obtained his journeyman license and then his master electrician's license. Joshua is here today to talk to us about the new kid's book he wrote entitled, What Does Your Daddy Do? Joshua, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Joshua, so you're here with us today to talk about your new book, What Does Your Daddy Do? And I must say, the book piqued my interest because despite suffering the economic effects of the pandemic, Northwest Indiana's building industry is actively recruiting qualified talent to maintain the state's competitive housing market, and experts believe a bounce back in the region's construction trades is inevitable. And additionally, here in Northwest Indiana, We have all of the steel mills, which are, again, a huge trade industry. So before we talk about your book, please take a moment to tell us about yourself.
I grew up a couple different ways. So my mom passed away when I was 13 years old. I went to live with my father and went to a trade school. I actually had a falling out with my father and that side when I was young. So I actually ended up running away and ended up living with my aunt, which was my mother's sister. Still went through trade school. Wasn't a good student. I was always getting into trouble. I was a C&D student. But I think it took me about till senior year to really figure myself out and say, you know what, I really need to buckle down, get my grades in order. You know, I really need to do this. And so I went to trade school for electrical, and then I graduated senior year in electrical. And I received my journeyman's license probably about 3 years after graduating, and my master electrician's license about another 2 years after that. I went to work for a big electrical company for about 8 years, doing commercial buildings, big schools, colleges, hospitals. And then I decided I wanted to do my own thing. I wanted to be able to be there for my kids when they got off the bus. I wanted to put my kids on the bus. I wanted to coach their sports, and I just wanted to be there for them. So I ended up quitting that company and started my own company. And I did a few different things before starting my own electrical company. But now we're into year 11 of my electrical contracting business. We have 15 employees, multiple vans, and we do a lot of what I did back then. So that's how I got started into the electrical trade and trades in general.
Great. So Joshua, listening to you share your journey to becoming a master electrician, I have to ask you, it sounds like college is not the only option, correct?
That is correct. And when I was young, I knew I wasn't going to college. My mom didn't have money for it. I wasn't smart. I was a C&D student. And I knew at that time that I was definitely not going to college. So what piqued my interest about the trade school is that you only had to go to school 2 weeks out of the month, and the other 2 weeks were in a trade. Because it went, you know, 1 week of academics, another week of trade, 1 week of academics, another week of trade. So that's originally why I went there, because I said, heck yeah, you know, I only have to go to school 2 weeks out of the month. You know, sign me up. So that's why I originally went to a trade school.
We're speaking with Joshua Page, author of the new kids book, What Does Your Daddy Do? So Joshua, thinking about the pandemic, especially at the height of the pandemic, when people at that time were locked down in their homes, able to not only take a break from the hustle and bustle of everyday life, but also having that opportunity, if you will, to look around their homes and go, that wall could use a fresh coat of paint. Or in the case in which the work you do would fit in, that outlet in the bathroom that constantly causes problems if both the hairdryer and, let's just say, the electric toothbrush are plugged in at the same time. So thinking about, you know, cases like that, have you seen an uptick in business?
Yes, I think everyone in the trades has absolutely seen a complete uptick in business because, you know, COVID and the pandemic, you know, probably one of the best things to ever happen in this world and probably one of the worst things to ever happen in this world. You know, I think we all learned a lot, and it all affected us in different ways and, you know, all at the same time. But with all of these people working in tech and industries and leaving the offices by the drone, you know, it just all went home and then had to figure themselves out, like, how do we run this business? How do we do this? Oh, okay, we can do this from home now. All right, yeah, I'll set up my computer, my laptop, my screens. Okay, I can do this from home. Oh, wait, I need more outlets. I need internet. I need more power. I need a new electrical panel. And then while they're home, you know, building out their home office, hey, you know what? We've always wanted to do our kitchen. We've never been able to be home for it. Wow, why don't we do our kitchen? Why don't we do our bathroom? Why don't we put decks on? So there has been a huge inrush of projects from the home front over the last 2 years. I don't think anybody in the trade has slowed down because of it. Now we're starting to see more people leave their homes and go back to the offices, but they're still, you know, they're still doing a lot of stuff to their houses that they've never been able to do or never had the eye for because they haven't been home long enough because they've always been in the office for 12, 14 hours a day.
So Joshua, you are a staunch advocate for the trades, often encouraging young people to explore a career in the trade as an alternative to college. Why are you so passionate about the trades? And is that what led you to write the book, What Does Your Daddy Do?
So, yeah, that's a two-part answer. So why am I so passionate about the trades? I was lost and confused when my mom died and going through my high school career. And, you know, it's awkward enough going through high school and trying to make friends and girlfriends and try to figure life out And with me running away and living with my aunt, not having a good relationship with my dad, my mom is gone. I really was constantly searching for someone to be proud of me, right? Somebody to tell me how good I was doing, or I was searching for that from my mom, and it obviously wasn't there. But once I started getting involved in the trades and was able to build something with my own hands, I was proud of myself. And as soon as I was proud of myself for building that, or turning that light switch on, or plumbing a faucet, or putting a roof on, whatever project I was in, I was like, wow, this is really cool. Like, I built this. Like, I had a box of parts and material, and I put it all together, and it worked, and I did it. And I didn't need someone else to tell me that they were proud of me. I was able to do it. So to me, I think the trades and building saved me. You know, I really do. And there's just something about being counted on and being relied on by other people that don't have that skill set that just fires me up inside. Like, I love when people say, hey, can you fix this? And you fix it. And they're just like, how did you do that? And I'm like, oh, you know, X, Y, Z. Like, that's our skill set in the trades. And it doesn't matter if you're an electrician. You can still do the same thing as a carpenter, as a plumber, as a welder. Once you have that skill set, nobody can ever take that away from you. And you can use it in every aspect of life. And the reason why I wrote the book is because about 6 years ago, I was invited to speak at a career day event about becoming an electrician. And when I got there, there was a fireman, environmental police, a tax advisor, someone from like Edward Jones, and then me. And I was like, all right, I'm either in the wrong space or like, I don't even know what the heck I'm doing here. So I had 30 minutes to talk to a bunch of high school kids. And I decided 25 minutes of that, I was going to tell them my story about high school, my mom passing away. And then 5 minutes of it, I told them about becoming an electrician. They all left. And the teacher came up to me and said, Josh, I have never seen in my entire teaching career someone hold 15 kids' attention for so long on every single word. How did you do it? And I said, because I got them to trust me with my story. You know, they're interested in being an electrician, but they need to trust me, the stranger walking in firsthand. And I started doing that a lot. And I would speak to a lot of career day events, and kids would get excited about being an electrician and all of this. And I loved it, but I didn't feel I was making a big enough of an impact. And when the pandemic hit, I had about 2 weeks that we shut down the company, and I said, you know, I can't just sit here. Like, what can I do? And so that's when I wrote the children's book. And honestly, I wrote it, and then I just saved it on Microsoft Word. I didn't do anything with it because I didn't think anybody would care. I didn't think anybody would read it. I thought it was garbage. And then 2021, I opened it back up again, and I said, Josh, this book's not written for you. You've got to show up. And you've got to put this book out there for the next generation of kids that are lost or confused, or maybe were just like you when you were young. That's what this book is for. It's not for you. So put the book out there and let it be shown. And so here we are today. And I'm so proud of the book. We've got a lot of great feedback from parents and kids. And I really think it's going to help to change the next generation.
Joshua, so as I shared at the start of our conversation, I wanted to speak with you today because your book highlights the importance of working in the trades, a big industry here in Northwest Indiana that sadly, like across our country, has seen a decline in the next generation of workers. The book opens with one of the main characters, Ashton, heading off to school for a career week. Once settled in his fifth grade classroom, his teacher, Miss Dusenberry, starts the discussion of career week. The kids are really interested in it, and they want to learn more. So take a moment to tell us about your book, What Does Your Daddy Do?
Yeah, so the career week at school, you know, they're just finding out about different careers. And Miss Dusenberry is telling them that she's a teacher, and that's a career, that jobs are more short-term. But if it's a long-term job, then it becomes a career. So the kids are interested. Ashton knows that his dad's an electrician, but he doesn't exactly know what he does. So he goes home and, you know, he asks dad, and dad shows him all these cool things. And then he has to report back to school the next day. And, you know, I think as kids, sometimes we don't even know what our parents do, right? Like, I know
That's true.
Have friends that I'm like, I don't even know what you do. Like, exactly do you do? You know, so I think growing up, unless your parents were in the trades or they hired tradespeople to work at home when you were there, I think a lot of kids don't even realize what a carpenter is or what a plumber does, or they might know what a roofer is because they can put two and two together. Like, there's a roof on the house, you're a roofer. But for the most part, like, kids don't even know what that is. I know growing up, I had no clue what an electrician was. I literally went to trade school to go into cosmetology.
Wow.
And I'm 6'4", 230 pounds. Like, I couldn't picture myself doing French tips, French braids, and manicures for the rest of my life. But I thought cosmetology was about, you know, makeup in the movies. Like, that's what I wanted to do, like the gore and the makeup and all that stuff. So growing up, I had no clue what an electrician was. So I'm hoping these books will just kind of start the conversation younger, like, oh, that's what an electrician does. Like, that's really cool. Or like, I don't want to do that. Like, okay, perfect. That's fine too. I was just reading this book to my 8-year-old son. Well, actually, he wrote it to me the other day, and I let him read the whole book. And then we closed and I said, okay, buddy, we got to get to bed. And he said, Dad, I said, what, buddy? He said, I don't know what I want to do when I grow up. And it was like, that's the magic moment right there that I want for every kid reading this book to say to their parents or to their teacher, like, just get the conversation started. You know, it's fine if you don't want to be in the trades. It's fine. But I want it to be a conversation that gets started young, so that way they have time to make up their mind. And they actually can learn about the trades instead of finding out when they're 16, 17, 18 years old. Because by then, not that it's too late, but it almost is too late. Like, you know, they need to get involved earlier. And there's a lot of kids out there that are great at doing Legos or building tree houses or working on their dirt bike or their cars. And they would be phenomenal in the trades, but they just don't even know it exists.
So in addition to kids having access to your book, do you think that representatives from the trade industry should participate in career days at their local schools?
I think career days are great. I mean, I think they're becoming more and more popular. Honestly, with the pandemic, it stopped, right? It 2020, nobody went and visited schools. 2021, nobody visited schools. 2022, we're starting to visit schools now. And I think it's good. I think, to me, the reason why I wrote the book between third and sixth grade is I think that's the magic seed that needs to be planted then. Seventh and eighth grade is your awkward years. Ninth through 12th, you're being shoved with so much college information that there's not much room for much else. And I think a lot of those kids, to be honest and blunt, I think a lot of those kids that are not going to go to college are just going to put up the front and say, no, I'm not going to college. And if they're not redirected somewhere else, then those are the ones that they're just going to get in trouble. They're going to make bad choices. They're going to do things that aren't right. And they're just not going to live a life of purpose. And that, honestly, the reason why I say it is because that was me for a little bit. You know, that was me. Like, I was getting into trouble. There was no purpose until I found out exactly, and until my back was up against the wall and I need to make a choice in that senior year and say, okay, I have no options. I'm not going to college. My mom has passed away. I don't talk to my dad. I live in the breezeway of my aunt's house. Like, I need to make a decision. That's what it took for me. But I don't think a lot of kids are going to have that same mentality as I did. And I think a lot of them are going to get stuck. So I think we need to get the trades and options to them earlier, not pushed on them, just educated. Just like this children's book is just an option. Like, hey, you want to read this book? Oh, perfect. We find out about an electrician. It's just planting the seed. That's all I want to do.
Joshua, you just shared something that reminds me of a recent personal experience. You know, you spoke about planting that seed early, exposing kids to the idea of working in the trades industry at a very early age, even sharing your thoughts on what to share at varying ages and stages, including that by the time a student makes it to high school, it might be a little harder to introduce them to the idea of trades because they may be working towards their goal of attending a college or university. And that leads me to want to share this moment of transparency as we talk about students being encouraged to get good grades and strive for college as the only option. So I have a son that is in his junior year of high school. He's a pretty good student. Well, actually, he's a great student. He takes all AP and honors courses. But an opportunity for a select number of students at his high school came up to take part in a 2-year electrician's trades course that could actually lead to an apprenticeship. So my son, he filled out all of the required paperwork. We as parents, we signed off on it because this was something that he was interested in. But sadly, his application was rejected because he was told that he was on the college track. And that really bummed him out. So what do you say to that sort of excluding students from even learning about a career in the trades simply because they make good grades or are on the college track?
That's tough because, one, if your son made it and is definitely college bound and that's exactly what he wants to do, but he just wants to learn about the trades, he would block an opportunity for another kid who absolutely wants nothing to do with college but wants the trades. So that one scenario. But the other scenario is just because your son is extremely smart and in AP classes and everything else, doesn't mean that he's going to want to go to college.
Exactly.
Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's just a really smart kid and doesn't want college, but maybe he works really well with his hands and he could be the next plumber or the next automotive technician or the next engineer, you know. But yeah, that's a tough one. That is tough because they are steering him. They didn't give him an option. They're saying, yeah, because of your grades and how smart you are, you don't belong in the trades. Like, you're going to college whether you like it or not. That's pretty much what they're saying.
Yeah, and it really bummed him out. And because of that, I'll be honest with you, he made the decision that once he graduates high school, he will pursue a program on his own.
For him.
Absolutely. I will support him no matter what it is, if he goes to Harvard or if he goes and becomes part of a local apprenticeship program.
Do I have time to tell you a short story?
You do. You certainly do. Go right ahead.
I love telling this story because, again, college is not the only option, and I'm not pushing the trades. It's just an option. But what I am pushing for every single person that's listening to this broadcast right now, I don't care if you're 10 years old or 70 years old, I want you to live your life with passion and purpose. And here's the story. My oldest son has ADHD. It was extremely tough to deal with when he was younger, and I was talking with a customer of ours, and he said his son was the same thing. And I said, okay, great. Like, what do I do? How do I parent differently? What can I do to help him? And he said, well, my son loved video games. Like, he was very bad at school. He would lie about his homework. If he did it, he would get like a 14 on homework. Like, he would just fail everything, but he loved video games. And I'm like, okay, you know, and I said, that's great. My son doesn't really play video games that much, but all right. And I said, you know, where is your son now? And he said, my son's 23 years old. I said, wow. I said, okay, so you made it. You know, you got him through high school. Like, what's he doing now? And he said, you'll never believe it, Josh. And I said, what? And this was probably 6 years ago, so it was before the pandemic. And he said he lives in a 12,000-square-foot mansion in Las Vegas with six other men. And I said, wow, what the heck does he do? And he said they tour the country setting up video game conferences throughout the entire country for people to play video games against each other throughout the world. And he makes $200,000 a year.
Wow.
And I said, oh my gosh. Like, here's this kid that you thought was a complete failure, was a loser in school, you know, was never going to make it out of him, had ADHD. And here he is doing phenomenal, didn't go to college, didn't go into the trades, but he followed his passion and is living life with purpose. And I said, good for him. And I told this story to every single person that will listen to it, because to me, that means more than anything in the world. And I think as parents, we try to push our kids into these little shapes and ideals that we imagine we want them to be. But sometimes that's just not who they are. But if every single one of us lived life with passion and purpose, I think this world would be a lot better off.
Let me just say this, Joshua. Thank you for being so open and honest and transparent and sharing your whole story as you shared in receiving feedback from not only the teacher from that very first career day event that you participated in, but also feedback just from community members who have received your story in a way. Yeah, it's great when you hear from a doctor, from an engineer, from an architect, but to actually see someone who maybe has experienced life's ups and downs the way you have, and for you to share your passion, I think that that is what is so moving and at the same time motivating for young people as well. So I just wanted to thank you for being so passionate for that. And just listening to you, I can tell that how you receive love is by giving and sharing. And so I just wanted to take a moment to just say thank you for that, because not a lot of people are generous with their story. And oftentimes when you hold your story in and when you don't share your story with someone else, that can impede someone else's progress. So I just wanted to tell you thank you for sharing your story, sharing your journey, and being so open and honest. And I am just amazed that you wrote this story in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's based on Career Week at school, and that's mm-hmm. you know, where I found out about, you know, teaching of the trade was at Career Week. So this is going to be the first book in the series. I plan on doing another four, with the next one being plumber and HVAC, then carpenter, welder, and then cosmetologist. And then before anyone asks, because it always comes up, everyone says, well, what about moms? What about moms? What about moms?
Right,
and I'm
right.
like, yep. So the next series is going to be the same exact trades, and it's going to be, what does your mommy do? Because I want the little girls growing up to understand that they too can be the next best carpenter, the next plumber, the next cosmetologist, the next electrician. They too can do that just as much as the boys can. And I don't want any little girl to be out there and saying, wow, I wish I could be an electrician, because they can. I can only write one book at a time, and this book was primarily about me being an electrician during career week. But the next books coming out are going to be, even better. And I think with this series of books and with teaching the parents and educating the kids about the trades, I think it'll be another option for them, and that college is not the only option. It's a great option, but so aren't the trades. And because I know there's a lot of other kids that are out there that grew up just like me, but they might not have that mentor or someone to look up to that has been where I've been. And maybe they'll think back on this book that they read at the library, or this book that they read at preschool, or this book that was given to them for Christmas or something. Be like, wow, maybe I can do this, or maybe I can do that. And maybe they don't become an electrician. That's fine. But maybe they go into something that they're passionate about and they love, and they find out, I love to be a welder. I love to be a roofer. I really love painting. Okay, great. Because I think as parents, we push our kids into certain areas that we felt we failed at growing up and we wish we would have done.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where a lot of people push the kids to college. Like, oh, I'm not successful. You should have went to college. I should have went to college, so you should go to college and you become successful. But that's honestly a lie that we've told generation after generation after generation, because you don't need to go to college to be successful. There are plenty of tradespeople throughout the entire country that are doing extremely well, if not equal to or better than a college graduate, with no debt. And where the national debt average is $1.3 trillion, whether they're going to pay for it or not, it's still in the trillions. And somebody, that money just doesn't appear. The taxpayers are going to have to pay for it. Somewhere along the lines, we will have to pay for that. So when you go into the trades, you are debt-free. When you go into college, you're going into debt. You potentially could have a very good job. You're going to have a great education, but you're still going to have to find a job at the end. When you go into the trades, you have the job right from the start, and you're getting paid right from the start, and you can do very, very well. Not everyone is made for college, and not everyone's made for the trades either. It's just another option.
So finally, Joshua, I read the book, What Does Your Daddy Do? And as I've shared many times throughout our conversation, I absolutely loved it. For our listeners who are interested in picking up a copy, can you share more information on how they can get their own copy?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can buy it in print on Amazon. It's available by Amazon. You can also get it as an ebook from Amazon. Barnes & Noble has it online. Most of the major retailers online will carry it. And if you buy it, please, please, please leave a review, leave us a testimonial, take some pictures. We have a What Does Your Daddy Do Facebook page. You can tag us on that. I'd love to get this book into every kid's hands throughout the country and throughout the world, really. I mean, the trades are needed, and kids need to be, taught about them at an early age. So I appreciate anything and everything, and buy the book for Christmas, buy the book for birthdays, for Father's Day coming up next year, and stay tuned for more coming soon.
Joshua Page is a father, husband, a master electrician, and the author of the kids' book, What Does Your Daddy Do? Joshua, thank you so much for spending time with us today on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for having me. It's been my pleasure.
And that's it for Regionally Speaking for this week. Thanks to our guests, State Senator Dan Durnell, Northwest Indiana Financial Advisor Greg Hammer, and book author Joshua Page. And we'll be back with you next week with an all-new show.